This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Welcome back to Whitley Strieber's Dreamland podcast, the long-running and legendary exploration into all manner of strangeness. I'm James Falk, monthly guest host of this show and host of Neon Galactic, which you can find on YouTube or anywhere else you get your podcasts. It's an absolute honor to be here and to host these conversations on transcendent themes and revolutionary ideas. The world is pivoting, a new cycle unfolding, and it's my greatest joy to join you all in this exploration. Our guest today is one of my favorite people in this space, remote viewer and lifelong experiencer Bertie Jaworski, also known by some as Prudence Calabrese, is a phenomenal talent, someone who was introduced to the rather militaristic modes of RV procedure, mastered them, then went on to create her own methodology, transdimensional mapping. She has become a great teacher of the art and is right now working to make her method free for everyone. Just as so much of the UFO space is trying desperately to make a buck, she's reaching out a dexterous hand to help people cultivate their own insight free of charge. But even beyond remote viewing, Jaworski has had a lifelong set of experiences that exposed her to the presence and proliferation of non-human intelligences with all of us on this planet. We'll explore those experiences, her work as a remote viewer, her ongoing advocacy for UFO disclosure, recent Trump releases, and much more. It's a privilege, once again, to converse with such a bright and joyful seeker of reality's deepest secrets. Welcome, Bertie.
Thank you so much, James. I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. I love our conversations, and I know we're going to have an amazing one today.
As do I. You've been on Neon Galactic several times. This is your first time with me on Dreamland. So I'm going to back up a little bit in our normal conversational dynamic and start at the beginning for folks who may not have heard it from you in the past. You've been at this basically your whole life, it sounds like. And I want to sort of give people a sense of that breadth and experience. So who is Bertie Jaworski, and how did you get sucked into this strange subject arena that we so love?
Well, I've been an experiencer since a very young age. My very first experience that I remember happened when I was 7 years old. I was with my sister, and it was over Christmas vacation, and we were playing with our Christmas gifts. Now, keep in mind, this was around 1972, so I, 71. I was young, and at the time, the Lone Ranger was a big hit on television. And so my parents had gotten us a Lone Ranger and his sidekick Tonto action figures. And so we were playing with them in the evening. This was in Massachusetts, where I grew up. And the snow was just starting to lightly come down outside. And this strange light came through the window. Very unusual light. Never saw anything like it before or since. It was grayish, greenish, purplish with these sparkles in it. And my sister and I dropped the dolls and turned to the window to look to see what was causing this light. And we saw a silver saucer, part of it, not the whole thing because the window was blocking some of it, but like the front edge. And at that time, I was just a little kid in the 70s. I didn't have any framework for even understanding what this might be. It was just bizarre. And we dropped our dolls, and all of a sudden, our dolls flew up into the air between the two of us and started spinning in opposite directions. And that's the last thing that my sister and I remember from that moment. The next morning, wow. We woke up. Next morning, ran to get Mom. Mom, 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 Mom. And my mom just said, oh, you girls had a nightmare. And we just kind of gave each other the side eye. And it wasn't until, just a couple years later, and I was at the public library looking at books as a voracious reader and looking at the new books that were coming in. And there was a new book for young folks. And it had a big picture of a flying saucer on the cover. It was kind of a book for children. And it had photographs, purported photographs and sketches and all kinds of interesting stories. I checked that out so fast, ran home with that book. Oh, yeah. And my sister and I, we read it cover to cover many, many times. And we realized that's what we saw. And So that was the beginning of my journey. I've had
It's an answer.
numerous.
Yeah, some questions
Yeah,
I'd like
go
to
ahead.
ask about that real quick. Your sister, I mean,
Yes.
obviously you've dedicated your life on, to some extent in trying to flesh out, that initial experience and the other ones that followed. Does your sister remember that event, and how does she feel about all of this? Has it continued for her as well?
She absolutely remembers the event, and she doesn't think that she's had other experiences after that. But it can be hard to tell because with
Sure.
memories being not exactly what you think they are, perhaps things feeling like a dream state instead of reality. But she remembers it quite vividly, and
Yeah.
she has not fallen into the same obsession that I have with the subject. For her, to have had that experience was enough. But for me, it just became the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You it seems like the memory comes to an abrupt end, and may have
Yes.
continued, but you don't know. Abduction or anything like that may have occurred, but you just can't tell, huh?
I have no memory at all of what happened next. I have what might be snippets of memories, but I'm not sure that those were from that same time or if they happened before or after. Just strange little furtive flashes of things.
Yeah.
But and I've never undergone hypnotic regression, never have done that. And I kind of don't want to for a lot of reasons. I like the mystery. I'm a little afraid about what I might uncover. And also because I do have the tools to discover what happened without having to put myself through that kind of trauma. Of
Yeah,
course, that is remote viewing.
and you have control over that, obviously, and can do that at
Right.
your own leisure on your own journey. So that
Exactly.
continued in your childhood. It sounds like there was more experiences that sort of compounded on that, right?
It did. The next one that was a big one that I remember, I was 15, almost 16 years old. And again, it was over winter break. And I was at a slumber party with five or six other girls, six other girls actually. And we were playing truth or dare the way that teenage girls do. And I took the dare. And my friend lived in a beautiful home. She was one of the more wealthy families in town. They had tennis courts and a swimming pool and an enormous backyard with pine trees bordering it. And there was a foot and a half of old snow on the ground, the kind of snow where the top gets crunchy. And if you walk through it, you hear yourself crunch through it.
Yeah.
And I took the dare, which was okay. You've got to run around the whole yard naked, singing the Love Boat theme song. And they knew I was up for everything, so I went ahead and did it, tore off my pajamas, started running around the field singing Love Amazing and True. And
The phone. You gotta love
exactly.
it. Yeah.
And as I rounded the corner by the pine trees, this big, huge orange diamond-shaped object came out from behind the trees very slowly, just hovering, floating above me. And it was absolutely, absolutely enormous. People, oftentimes will say, oh, it was the size of a football field. But this really was the size of a football field. It was so huge. And it just slowly kind of hovered over. And the last thing I remember was thinking I could pick up one of those pine cones on top of that frozen snow and chuck it at it, and it would hit it.
Yeah.
And the next morning, my friends and I were having breakfast, and my friend's father looked at us and said, wow, you girls must have been in the makeup last night. And I looked around, we all looked at each other, and we're like, huh? Because our faces were all red. We didn't even notice till then.
Yeah.
But we had no memory of me taking that dare or anything like that the night before. We just shrugged it off. And it wasn't until the following, like a year and a half later, at high school graduation. I was at a high school graduation party, and one of my best friends, who had been at that slumber party, had too much to drink and was throwing up into a bush, and I was holding her hair back the way that friends do in
Like a
that
good
time.
friend should,
And
yeah.
exactly. And there was something about the light in the trees that night. There was just something about it. And boom, that memory just came flooding back. And I just happened to say to my friend, hey, do you remember that slumber party? And she instantly remembered. And there were a few of the other girls at that party as well. And we all got together and talked about it for a long time.
Yeah.
And so, again, we don't know what happened after I saw the thing and they saw the thing from a distance. That's all we
you get up
remember.
To the engagement, and then it seems like the memory stops again, which is
right.
Really, really fascinating.
And I think that's kind of typical in these sort of encounters, experiences, ones that maybe involve abduction or some kind of a close encounter.
Yeah.
You get a screen memory or your memory's wiped.
Yeah, some kind of missing time potentially. I mean, there's all of
right.
those. I thought of the Cash Landrum sighting when you mentioned the sort of diamond
Yes.
shape, which I think that they also saw a diamond that was floating. It doesn't sound like that one was as big as the one that you witnessed, but similar morphology,
Yeah.
maybe.
Yeah, I've often thought about that when I've read about the Cash Landrum case, thinking, wow, that sounds just like the one, just like the one that I saw. And so
And you
maybe
ended
it
up with the with
was related.
the some radiation exposure or
Or something,
ultraviolet or
right.
something. Yeah. Which is
Exactly.
another
Now,
common occurrence, obviously, in sightings like that. I mean,
it is, and I don't feel that it's had any lasting negative effect on me, but it certainly gave me rosy cheeks.
yeah. It reminds me, real quick, to throw out there. I've been doing this show for several years now, and my mom, not that long ago, was telling me that my niece had called out of the blue and said, "Do you remember the UFO we saw?" And my mom was starting to say no, but then suddenly she remembered they had been on a drive down the coast of California to go to the Bay Area from where I live, which is up near the Oregon border. And they had seen a light in the sky, and it seemed to come and center itself over their car and follow them for a while. And neither one of them can remember how it ended, and they don't know. They have no recollection of anything that happened beyond that point until way later on in the drive. And then suddenly the memories sort of kick back up. But she had no memory of this. And it occurred to my niece at random. And they just told me they had this experience. And I've been doing the show forever. It's just like a lot more people are having these experiences than we are aware of. And sometimes the memories kick off spontaneously. And suddenly you're like, wow, I have been impacted by high strangeness. I just never really knew.
Yeah, I think it's a way more common occurrence than people understand. And I think that perhaps that what's happening out in public today with these new documents coming to light from the Pentagon or Department of War.
Department of War, yeah.
really releasing all these, you know, thousands of documents at this point is starting to get out into the whole cultural mood. And it may be waking people up. Those nascent memories, I think, are being jogged and people are starting to remember. I've heard from so many people, actually, over the past couple of weeks since the first UFO drop, people saying, wow, I was looking at this. I was reading these documents and I remembered something. So I think this is happening on a large scale.
What an interesting idea that if, you know, the whole disclosure conversation is so complicated. Partly because if you release all the information at once, you're going to unleash this sort of buried trauma that is a part of the population from decades past. I mean, that could seriously be an element in the considerations they're making. Because, you know, like when people saw the cover of Communion, it's like suddenly that little bit of information kicked off an awakening about their past. If there are, you know, potentially hundreds of thousands or millions of experiencers, and you throw out information, all of a sudden, all of that could come rushing in, and that would explain potentially their reticence.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. Just imagine, I mean, right now the drops are including fuzzy infrared, you know, videos or imagery. Everything's a little amorphous or viewed from far away, a little hard to tell what's going on. But imagine if they did post some of these videos that have been discussed kind of in, you know, hush, hush in secret that these kinds of
HD.
things exist where, you know, 4K, high definition, aliens in the window in a saucer kind of a thing that people are saying that are allegedly, you know, in possession by the government. If if anyone saw that, something like that, and they had had an experience, it could be very traumatic. So I think that that could be one of the reasons why this has been kept from us for so long. And maybe this kind of a slow rollout is necessary to get people on the same page.
Sort of just the wavelength before you slam people with all of
Right.
the trauma. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back with Bertie Jaworski.
Listen to this excerpt from Transformation 2026 about an abduction that happened to someone working with me last summer. In May of this year, the woman who was working on the creative project with me woke up to find herself being watched by a gray who looked like the being on the cover of Communion. When my co-worker thought to herself that she was terribly frightened and wished that it was dawn, a gigantic light immediately flooded the room. As her fear inexplicably melted away, she was grabbed by the wrist and lifted toward the ceiling. She remembers moving up right through the ceiling. Her next memory is of finding herself in a heap on the floor of the bedroom, and the light of the dawn was just coming in the windows. Transformation 2026, the deepest dive into the close encounter experience that has ever been published. Get it now in audio, as a Kindle, as a hardcover, as a paperback. Available on Audible and on Amazon and on Apple Audiobooks.
So you mentioned to your friend that you guys discussed it, sort of had this joint epiphany, and then how did it unfold in your life from that point? I mean, did you at that point begin to think maybe I'm targeted, or that there's something about me that these things seem to like, or did that come later?
By that time, I kind of felt a connection to whatever is out there. I wasn't sure what that connection was, but I had read everything I could get my hands on. And I had, even by then, as a teenager, was signing up for those kind of grimy newsletters you could sign up for on the back of Popular Mechanics and plug in your money. This is way before the internet as we know it. So
Those things were
I would
fact
get.
I mean fast wonderful, and I think it's a missing we don't have those anymore. It sucks.
is.
There's a
I
real
agree.
culture
I
around those things.
agree. Yeah. And there was something beautiful about having to wait for the information. There was something beautiful about that. It gave you time to process and to think about and to wonder. But now everything's so instantaneous, and we're being bombarded on a daily basis by so much new information or new voices in the field that it can be hard to get a balanced perspective. So I kind of miss those days where you had to wait for the conferences once a year, wait for your newsletters that you saved up for. There was some beauty in that.
I think that, I mean, that's another conversation, but I think that that is part of what's driving our current, social collapse, is that we're also
Yes.
inundated with information that it's lost real relevance to our lives. We can't really savor any of it. We can't really digest any of it. It's just a constant onslaught, and it makes it impossible. And for folks who aren't in this
Yes.
topic, I mean, imagine you're inundated with everything all the time, and then here comes UFOs. It's just like, I can't handle it. I refuse to engage because I'm obsessed with the war in Iran or gas prices or any other thing that takes up your attention. And it takes a real conscious effort to kind of focus on something so extraordinary. And some people don't want to make it at this point.
Yeah, and I think for some people that's probably the right choice because we are living in difficult times right now. Everyone's feeling that economic pinch. Everyone is suffering, when the if they have a gas car going to the gas station, everyone's a little terrified about, impending war, World War III, what could possibly be happening. Now we have things like hantavirus and Ebola
I know.
coming out. It's a scary time to be a human being on this planet. And so I don't blame anyone who doesn't want to consider what the phenomenon might be about right now, because that might be just one step too far beyond having to deal on a daily basis with all of this insanity. So I get it. I really get it.
So do I. And I also think
Yeah.
that ultimately the two are linked in some kind of psychic dance. It's like part of that we're in this pressure cooker, the pressure's getting ramped up just as this stuff is really coming out. And I think that one is related to the other. The nature of that relationship, I'm not sure of yet. There is, it is responding, I think, to the stress levels in our species on some level.
I agree. I think we're at a big crossroads right now, and we're trying to determine who we are, and everyone is flailing around, whether they're at the highest levels of government or whether they're, part of the most of us, the 99%. We're all trying to figure out what's real, what's important right now, and it can be very hard with all the messaging going on. And I think that the phenomenon is responding to that.
So, and to continue with your development, what was the next major event that kind of, reeled you in, further into the maelstrom or the maze, I
Yeah,
guess?
well, nothing much happened for a good decade or so. I had young children. I was doing this and doing that, just being a young mom. And in 1995, I was had just almost turned 30 years old, and I was watching the nightly news. And of course, this was before the internet, as we know it. The internet was like in its infancy, as far as the public was concerned. And so you couldn't really get your news online. I didn't even have a computer, but I was watching nightly news on the regular television, and this military guy was talking, and he had like a blonde page boy haircut, and he had just reached retirement age. His name was Major Ed Dames, who sadly passed away very recently, just a few weeks ago. And he was telling the world that he was part of this program called Stargate. And Stargate was a program that lasted for over 2 decades, spent millions of taxpayer dollars. And the purpose of the program was to develop psychic soldiers, soldiers who could use only the power of their minds to travel the entire world and to collect information on our adversaries, or find out interesting tidbits about world leaders. They were using it for very pragmatic purposes and for some other not so pragmatic purposes. They discovered they used several known psychics in addition to scientists from SRI, Stanford Research, and scientists like Hal Puthoff, psychics like Ingo Swann, and they came up with a series of protocols that they called remote viewing, meaning you were sending your mind somewhere else and you could see and experience what was happening. And this guy, Major Ed Dames on the nightly news, he literally pointed at the television and said, "And you can learn this too. Anyone can learn this." And all of these soldiers that were part of this program had just reached retirement age or were reaching retirement age, so they were being let loose on the public. And they started training, a few of them started training others or talking publicly about this program. When it was declassified, the government admitted that the Stargate program worked. It was effective. These soldiers were able to gather information in ways they couldn't explain. However, they couched this by also saying, but it didn't work quite good enough for us to continue paying for this program, and they claim the program was shut down. Now, I personally believe that the name of that program and where it was being held and all these kind of things was shut down, but I think that the bulk of the program was then moved into a more secret kind of operation, because I cannot imagine any government on this planet that had some psychic success spying on their adversaries would not continue that
Well,
research.
I mean, even if it's just to stay with the competition, because you have to assume that other nations would be wanting to do the same thing.
Right, and that's how this started.
And Dean Radin was on Neon Galactic with me not that long ago, and he said that he knows for a fact now that the government has continued its remote viewing efforts and that they are currently ongoing. So.
Yeah,
It's interesting.
I am sure.
Well, and then you hear about some of the successes that they had, and it's just, I mean, absolutely remarkable finding downed planes and
Yes.
kidnapped officials and seeing into secret Soviet facilities. Just mind-blowing stuff that was absolutely verified, later
Right.
on. So there was real efficacy behind
Yeah.
all of that.
And anyone listening to or watching this episode can go online and just search for Stargate program and look for Freedom of Information Act documents. There is an incredible amount of collected information out there that will show you literally some of these psychic soldiers, their literal results, the sketches that they drew, and the photographs of where they were mentally being sent. And it was incredible. And so when I learned about this, I absolutely became completely obsessed and decided I had to learn this, and this is what I was going to do the rest of my life.
And
So
that's what happened.
that's what happened. So I did. I was one of the very first civilians trained in remote viewing, the
And the
military
protocols
style
from
method.
the military method.
Right, yeah.
And then you did that for a while. Now, what kind of work were you doing? Because there's being a student, but then there's also basically becoming a professional remote viewer, which is where you
Right.
ended up. How did that process evolve?
Yeah, so I first started by working with Dr. Courtney Brown, who was a sociologist at Emory University, and he started the very first school for remote viewers out there, and it's called the Farsight Institute. Now, the Farsight Institute exists to this day. They're still doing their method of remote viewing. And they're still working on answering big questions out there. So I worked at Farsight to begin, first by creating their website, then by becoming a trainer myself, teaching others how to remote view, and then looking at project data and talking about remote viewing with others. And after a while, I started to get ideas of my own. I wanted to think about the whole system, the whole military style system in a different way. Now, Farsight had changed some of the military protocols in small ways, but their method still was highly derivative of the military method. But I wanted to take it in other directions and make it less militaristic, less patriarchal, change the language, make it more inclusive, encompassing. So I left Farsight and I started my own business, Transdimensional Systems, and train people all over the world. And we were the first real consultancy, remote viewing consultancy. We had many clients, worked for law enforcement, did work on missing persons cases, missing money, looking at perhaps future events. We did a lot of incredible work for clients and just fun in-house work where we were trying to figure out what was going on in the world. We were all interested in UFOs. The people that were interested in what I was doing had the same fundamental interest I did in expanding the idea of what this remote viewing was, and then also using it to explore the unknown.
That is so fascinating, and it's hard for me to, I mean, it seems like almost like a movie script where, like, there's intrigue there. There's also this getting exposed to this psychic truth about human nature that has always been kind of a lark in my mind. Like I wish it was true. The world would be better if it is true. But then to finally discover that, in fact, it is a capability that people have, and then you went and learned the capability. I mean, as you stumbled into this like reality, how did you come to terms with what you were experiencing, and how did your worldview shift? I mean, obviously, you were living in one kind of reality, and then you're exposed to remote viewing, and all of a sudden, it seems like some of the mystical ideas of the ancients, in terms of unified mind and all of that, is may have some proximity to the truth. Seems like it might be shattering in some sense.
Yeah, it was. Even though I had had this interest in UFOs for 20 years at that point, by the time I learned remote viewing, it was still kind of a separate thing to me. Oh, we might be visited from ETs or aliens, if you will, from another planet. I kind of had a basic basic understanding, because we didn't have the same kind of conversation that we do today about all the nuance in the field. It was all about, wow, flying saucers, crash retrievals, Roswell. And it was not difficult to place that within the cultural and religious spiritual framework that I had growing up as a Catholic. You know, I am going to Catholic school and mass every Sunday and confession and all these things for some years. Believing in the existence of extraterrestrials wasn't a stretch. In fact, even the Vatican has come out and said, hey, if there are ETs visiting us, we'll baptize them, right?
Exactly, so, right.
it wasn't a stretch for me, but remote viewing was a stretch. It was very much an ontological shock, mm-hmm. as people like to say these days. And it really started making me wonder about the nature of reality, because instead of looking outside of myself for answers, whether that was to the educational system or to a God, all these kinds of things, I started looking inward inside myself and getting all kinds of incredible answers. And we were exploring some of the biggest questions on the planet that humanity has had for thousands or more years. Some of our most ancient mythologies, our most ancient recorded history, we started looking at some of those things. The giants in the Bible, for example, or who really built the pyramids and what were those used for, or the whole Sumerian Anunnaki tales, all of these kinds of things I was fascinated with, and it started making my whole spiritual understanding shift in a major, major way. And that was difficult. And it wasn't difficult just for me personally. It was difficult for me and my relationships in my life with my family and some friends, because I went from being somebody who was, you know, maybe a little obsessed with UFOs to somebody who was, wow, she is like really off the deep end.
She's out there.
She's out there. Some people thought I had joined a cult by getting involved in remote viewing. And it wouldn't matter how many times I said, hey, I can prove it. Give me something to remote view. And some people took me up on it, and some people wouldn't even go that far. But even when I had wonderful results, they still couldn't cross that barrier. And I think that that's true for many people today, not only with remote viewing and related psi phenomenon, but also still with UFOs. So many people out there, despite all of these government drops, the increasing number of whistleblowers, we still have a large percentage of the population, I think worldwide, that is really struggling with this.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the reality that they've come to know. And so they're going to reject it until it's absolutely in their face. I'd like to ask you a little bit about, you mentioned that the militaristic sort of mode that you had initially been taught. Can you explain what about that mode turned you off? And then how, when you began to develop your own, you know, methodology, what you were trying to inculcate into those methods that would make it more inclusive and less, you know, toxic, I guess.
Yeah. So first of all, the first thing that bothered me about the military style system was the use of language that system had developed. So for example, the term remote viewing, I found that problematic. First of all, I didn't feel there was anything remote about it. I didn't ever feel that I was literally sending my mind anywhere. I just felt that if I tuned in, I could access information. And sometimes I wasn't looking at anything remote anyway. I was looking at myself or looking at things close to home. So the word remote always felt problematic to me. And the other word viewing also felt problematic to me. It sets up this idea that what you're doing is essentially watching a movie when you do this, that you're literally viewing something. And if you go online and look up something like top remote viewing results, or even a lot of the information that has come out public from the Stargate program, what you're looking at are sketches compared to photos. And I am not a visual person. I do see things when I do this process, but most of the time I just know it. It's like an understanding. I can get the smells and tastes and sensations. I might feel things in my body, but I literally don't see anything. I just know what's there and I can sketch out what I know, but I'm not seeing something. And so I started thinking about this, thinking, well, it's not really remote. It's not really viewing, I don't think, for most people. So I started wondering, well, what is this thing that we're doing? What is it? The other problem that I had was in the language of what you're literally doing. So in remote viewing and traditional remote viewing, you are given what's called a target. And of course, target is a logical military word. They wanted them to hit the target, to literally, you know, hit or miss something. And so I also found that word problematic. And that word is still used by most people in remote viewing to this day, but I changed that early on. And today I use the word experience because I feel that setting up your subconscious to hit or miss something is self-defeating. Yeah. And it also misunderstands the data as it comes in. Because I started to realize that if I looked at the body of evidence, every single remote viewing session I had ever done, and this was, you know, some years ago now, and all of the sessions that my students had ever done, and all the ones I could find online that people were starting to post out there in public, I realized that, you know, when they say, oh, this one's a miss, I hit this target, but I missed this one, I started looking at all those so-called misses, and I realized they weren't misses at all. What was happening were people were describing the so-called target using metaphor, simile, analogy, storytelling, different kinds of examples, just the way we talk to each other on a daily basis. Yeah. So, you know, so these remote viewers were asking people to do something that they normally don't do, to describe something in literal direct terms, but we never do this. We never do this. We are creatures of metaphor. So I started reading and doing a lot of research into metaphor and also into the right and left brain and how those things work together. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to throw out the idea of target. I'm going to say we're having an experience. And I'm also going to tell everyone, every single thing you do is 100% correct. It's a matter of understanding what your subconscious is trying to tell you. And I found that when I started approaching that in my way, my ability grew by leaps and bounds. It wasn't that it was magic. It was that I was understanding the own language of my subconscious and develop this really cool kind of give and take with it. So that's what I teach today. I call it transdimensional mapping. And it's a completely different animal from remote viewing. It's open, it's intuitive, and students have an absolute blast. And they learn a lot about themselves. They learn more about themselves from the universe, and they learn a lot about the universe.
Yeah. It seems that like by, you know, valuing every part of the experience when you're doing this and understanding that the information is coming at you and maybe it doesn't necessarily reflect, you know, the logical thing that you're after. So therefore you, you know, it may not be directly applicable to the question or whatever, but it's not wrong. You give yourself permission to kind of have a more fuller experience and take note of all the details that you might initially just excuse. And you can discover the relevance maybe later on. And I can see how such a kind of simple shift in semantics can potentially give someone, I don't want to use the word again, but permission to kind of value every part of the experience. And that's huge.
I think permission is the perfect word for this. And one of the things I always tell my students these days is that, you know, your subconscious in a way is like a child. You know, it's that right brain, intuitive, creative, gentle soul that we all have inside of us. It's not our left brain, our manipulative, controlling, wants an answer.
Yeah.
It's the more gentle side of us. And so if you're doing kind of traditional remote viewing, using the word target, and you keep telling your subconscious, well, I missed the target. It's the perfect way to shut down that conversation.
Yeah.
But when you say, wow, look what we did together. Let's figure it out together what this means. All of a sudden, it's that permission that allows you to blossom and flourish in this space. Yeah. And it's been remarkable watching students come in and the first day of class saying, oh, I missed it, and me gently correcting them. No. Let's look. Let's talk about it. Let's see exactly what you did. And then when I point out, wow, this is why you wrote this. Don't you get it? You know, and then light bulbs start going off. And, yeah. And in a class, you know, when everyone's working on the same experience, then when everyone is sharing at the end, it's incredible the light bulb moments that happen, and they see the commonalities and the common language that we use in terms of metaphor or analogies, what have you. It's because we do have that is our internal language.
Time for another short break. We'll be back in just 1 minute with more from experiencer and remote viewer Bertie Jaworski.
Where is the unknown country? Is it out there in the stars? Or is it also somewhere else? Is it in us, in you? Unknown country, join us today. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and join us. Join the questions. Join the search. Join the adventure. unknowncountry.com. There's no place like it in the world.
It seems that I've watched a lot of videos of you doing remote viewings, and because you could find them on your channel, which will be in the description for folks to check out. Your process seems a lot more embodied, if that's a proper way to put it. Like, you're not, I can see that you're like textures, like you're feeling textures, and you seem to be, the process is quite physical that you're going through. Is that also sort of a part of the methodology, do you think? And can you describe a little bit about how sometimes those things are part of the communication? Like, you may be doing something with your hands that is telling you something about what it is you're trying to find out, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a very physical process, a very kinesthetic process. And so I tell my students to pay attention to what your body is doing. Now, most of the time, I do my work at a standing table because I like to feel what's going on. And I'll find myself tapping things. I find myself singing often. I'm a musician, so the singing comes naturally to me. And every single thing that I do is a piece of data. Our bodies are giving us the answer, even when maybe our minds literally are not. It's like in regular life, maybe you get a gut feeling about something, or you get sick to your stomach, or you feel tension in your shoulders or your back. These are all subconscious signals that you need to pay attention to something around you. And yeah. So we get these same kinds of signals when we're mapping or remote viewing, whatever you want to call it. And paying attention to those, it opens up a different part of that universe, because you might be really resonating with somebody who's there at the experience, you know, and you might be feeling what they're feeling in their body. And maybe it's not coming through in language or visuals, but it might be coming through energetically like that. So it's a huge part.
Yeah. Would you share with us some of the more profound experiences you had while remote viewing? I mean, just if there's a few moments where you've caught a particular glimpse that gives you insight into the nature of things, or any other moments that were just like, you know, floored you, I guess.
Yeah, I think, okay, so one of my very favorite experiences of all time was kind of early on in my days as a remote viewer. My dad thought I joined a cult, as I mentioned before, and he was really concerned. So I said, no, just give me something to remote view. And one thing we haven't talked about here yet today is how most of the time when remote viewers or explorers in my language do this work, we do it what's called blind. We don't know where we're going. Yeah. Somebody else knows, or we've written it down and thrown it into a pool. And so you go in with a fresh mind, no expectations. And so I told my dad, here, just write something on a piece of paper, write down what you would like for me to do, or get a picture of something and write some random numbers on it and just give me those random numbers. And he eventually did give me some random numbers. And so, you know, I at first thought before I started doing this session was that he would have given me something, a famous battle in history or some big famous monument like the Washington Monument or the Eiffel Tower, you know, because that's what most people give you when you ask them, you know, if you want a demonstration. Right. Yeah. But what he gave me was a rock, a paperweight, or a rock he had picked up on a hike, and it was sitting on his desk, and it was just a boring old rock, not even a pretty rock, mind you, just a regular rock. Rock. It's a rock's rock, if you will. And so I started doing my session, and you began any remote viewing or transdimensional mapping session by allowing your hand to do a quick little automatic doodle of some sort. It's called an ideogram, and it's kind of like this internal language that we all have. So I drew a curved up and down line that looks like a mountain. And that's because this, you know, a rock is like a mountain. It's an inorganic, hard kind of a thing. So at first I'm thinking, oh, a mountain, maybe he gave me Mount Everest, maybe Mount Fuji, you know, of course, my mind, you cannot help. And especially then, because I was still new to this. So my mind was constantly trying to figure out what it was. Now I don't care what it is. I just described, but back then I was always trying to figure it out. So I thought, and after a while I thought, no, it's not that big. It's smaller. And it's a big, huge boulder, maybe some big famous boulder somewhere. And then I eventually got to the point where I realized, no, this is small and it's hard. And then I had this like incredible experience where I started describing this rock, and I truly merged with this rock. Now, this rock had some kind of consciousness, didn't feel like human consciousness, but it felt like it was connected to us in some way, like it was part of this whole big world, and I could feel it, its whole experience, if you want to call it,
like a rock, what it is to be a rock, like
yeah,
they say
what
in
it is to be a rock.
Yeah,
and I could see it from literally when it was formed, you know, it was an igneous rock, when it was formed to how it broke off from its original formation and it moved through the glaciers. And then it ended up being deposited near this, what became a trail that humans used. And then this human picked it up, and I could see this rock's journey till this rock finally meets its great reward when whatever happens to our sun and our planet no longer is vaporized or no longer exists, whatever happens to us, one day that rock is going to be gone. And not for a long time. It's been around way longer than we have, but I could feel all of it. And that was so profound to me because it made me realize that it's not just humans that have like a sense of self or a consciousness. And it also was one of the first deeply profound sessions that I'd ever done. So I realized that we're not limited by time or space, that you can dive into something and see it with every layer possible in its entirety, who it is, what it means, where it came from, where it's going. And that changed everything for me in my personal life and in my professional life. And now I just try to have a deep experience like that all the time. That's my goal, is to really feel everything in its deep entirety, to have a true experience.
Yeah, that
more
is
fun
a
than naming
story.
It is experiencing it.
I love that, and I think that gives a really powerful glimpse into the capabilities of this process and what it is we're tapping into. Which you know, a part of me, there's a matrix of consciousness and different sort of densities and creations, and rocks are part of that, just like everything else.
Right.
And to be able to sort of tap into that and engage with the essential nature of things would, to me, feel like a spiritual epiphany, an awakening of sorts.
Yes.
And it sounds like that's what it was for you. I wonder, like, you know, as someone who does this for a living, and you are obviously effective at it, and you've had, you know, lots of experience, how hard is it at times? I mean, how do you guard against people who are maybe not grounded intellectually or mentally, taking things you say too seriously, or like overinterpreting, or even elevating you up to a level that is like not, I mean, you're still a human being, you're a mom, maybe even a grandmother now. And it's like there's Birdie, the human being, and there's also a woman who practices this art and is teaching it, but you're still a human being. Do you find that there are times when people want to elevate the things that you say, and how do you guard against that?
It happened back in the day, and it's happening today, especially when I post a session online that has to do with an unusual topic. I did a series on the Three-Eye Atlas, astronomical object. I've done one on the biggest secret in the world. I've done some pretty crazy things, and people take it very seriously. And I always say, I'm just putting out the raw data. I'm not going to interpret this for you because I don't want to make any proclamations or put dates to things or try to, I don't want to be a guru. I don't like that at all. I walked away from that a long time ago. So when I do get messages from people, I do try to counsel them and just say, well, hey, learn it yourself. Learn it yourself. I had a couple of little mini free workshops on YouTube, but now I'm putting out my bigger work, the whole beginning transdimensional mapping system for everybody to learn, because I feel that if you engage in this with yourself, then you start realizing what this is and what it isn't. And you can start looking for those answers yourself. So that's what I'm doing right now, is stepping a little bit away from the public and putting this out there, because I want people to know it's not about me. It's about all of us individually, all of us collectively, where humanity is right now. I think this is such a powerful technique for exploring your own inner consciousness and outer consciousness, whatever creatures are out there that want to interact with humanity. And I think there's quite a few of them. So I try to empower people to learn from those for themselves.
No, and I appreciate that. Like I said in the beginning, I think that this is a moment where a lot of people are pivoting to welcome this new moment, and some people are doing it a good way, and some people are doing it rather poorly. And I think to be aware of your influence on certain folks in the population, and to be mindful of that, and to even take a step back if you feel like people are taking you too seriously is hugely noble, and I think an important example for folks to follow because, I mean, let's be frank, a lot of truths are coming out that are going to be shocking to people, and they're going to be looking for anyone who claims to know anything about anything. And if people get out there and abuse that authority or try to, sort of cultivate mystique or influence, it could end really, really badly and has in the past. So I think that we all need to be mindful of all of that and kind of try to avoid that cult-like behavior and mentality.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you
I
were
agree a
mentioning
thousand
though the
percent.
yeah the non-human intelligences. Now I know that you had a kind of a personal relationship at one point with a dude.
I did.
So if we could talk a little bit about that, and then also the download like things that you experienced through that process, because I think that that's a mode of contact that is more commonly reported now than even maybe abductions. People seem to be getting information from some cosmic source, and it blossoms in their life, so people can relate, I think.
And so then this happened about a year after I first learned remote viewing. And I think that this is completely connected. I think these two events are connected. I think that the remote viewing opened up my mind in new ways. And I think I was also searching for answers to my prior experiences with the unknown. And so I had this, it started and continued in my bathroom in the wee hours of the morning. I would get up, go to the bathroom, and there was a short little kind of classic gray alien standing there. It looked a little bit different. I mean, everyone's gray aliens have little, they're, minor differences, but kind of the bigger eyes, bigger head, small body, very short. I called him the gray dude, not to his face, but in my head. And And I never said anything. And the first couple of times I was like shocked, and I don't know that I would say I was afraid. I was just kind of like shocked, and I felt like I couldn't move, but that might've been coming from him. And I'm using the male pronouns here. I don't know.
Yeah. That was your sense.
So it just made sense. So, and what he would do is he'd show up most mornings, and not every morning that he showed up, but most of the mornings he did show up, he would give me this download of information. And I started calling those thought balls, you know, almost 30 years ago, because they were non-linear representations of very complex and related ideas. And many of these thought balls had to do with the history of humanity and even going into the future. Many had to do with where his people came from. Some of these had to do with science and mathematics that is still beyond my grasp. I can remember every single thought ball in its entirety. It's strange. It's almost like it has a little manila folder, each one of them in my brain. And I'm still trying to unravel them to this day. I wrote a book, which anyone can read for free on my website. It's called Intentions, the Intergalactic Bathroom Enlightenment Guide. And it's my attempt.
It's a brilliant book, by the way. Really well written. And I was intrigued to hear that you might be working on another book, which I was also glad to hear, because you're a very talented writer. So, but anyway, people should check it out. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it's absolutely for free. Free download. Enjoy. And it's like a memoir of my time growing up, how I got into remote viewing, some of the things that happened in the early days of remote viewing. It was the Wild West of remote viewing back then. Things are a lot different now. But and then the bulk of it really are these thought ball exercises where I'm trying to figure out what these things mean. And it's funny, back then, this was before I had figured out a lot about how remote viewing works and what the data looks like. But I was using in this book, I reread it recently because I hadn't read it myself in years. And I thought, wow. To describe these thought balls, I'm using metaphor and analogy and similes. You know, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's how our minds work. So that was actually kind of cool. And I am writing another book. I'm working on a couple. One is a manual, a transdimensional mapping manual that has a number of essays, and it has literally every single thing that you can do with transdimensional mapping with many examples. I'm going to make that available on my website as well. And I'm writing a book about the secret history of the gray ETs based on over 300 sessions that I did. And that book's coming out very beautiful. I think it's going to be just a delightful read.
Yeah. Now, that's an interesting project that I want to just explore with you for just a second. I don't want to get into the subject matter necessarily, because it's a big topic, but you had done a thing where you have this volume of targets, experiences that you're going to take up over time, and you had put in there a number of things related to ETs and over time, right, or gray ETs, and over time you had been doing viewings of these things, and you've gotten enough information that you feel like you're ready to put it together in a single work, correct?
Yes. Yeah. I have a pool of experiences that's over 8,000 any given moment. Sometimes it's more than that, sometimes a little less, but it's around there most of the time. And I've been throwing things in there for years. And it's funny, just the other morning when I was doing my session, I pulled something out of the experiences. I have a little app I wrote on my computer, and I press a button that gives me the random numbers. And it ended up being something I had put in there like 15 years ago. So you never know. You get what you get. You never know when you're going to get something. So it took me about 9 years to do this project on the gray ETs. And I still have experiences in that pool that I haven't gotten to, but I will get to over time. But I feel like I did enough of these mapping sessions to find out something interesting about this history, about where they may come from, how they might be related to us, what they may be doing. And I have presented a little bit of that on my YouTube channel, but not nearly as much as is going to be in the book.
Yeah, you came on my show and we talked a little bit about it. And if you people check out her YouTube channel, you can watch that and a bunch of other viewings that you've done that are all really, really amazingly compelling. I really enjoy watching you work just because it seems you're so connected. It seems so organic and natural and joyful in a way. It's like watching someone make art. And it's I don't know. It makes me
It's
happy.
my meditation. It's my happy place, my meditation. I feel it just comes from my heart. And in the class that I am putting up for free on YouTube, which should be, well, it will be live by the time this airs. Everyone can check it out and learn for free, completely for free. It's a live class. So it's wild and woolly. We've got 10 students in there and they all share their work over these 2 days. So everybody, I want you to watch this class. Do work along with the students, but when you get to the second day, make sure you do that session, that experience, because my students, their minds were blown. We even had one student have a full-on bilocation experience that he talks about in the sharing session, where he literally felt his whole body and mind and everything was at that place where this was. I'm not going to give away what it is because it's a fun one, but he had a full-on bilocation experience, and that's just part of the
And
process. It's beautiful.
after people get done with the watching the videos, will they be equipped to do viewings on their own in terms of like if they have
Yes.
curiosities or work with other people, they can get into the, sort of that practice in that community by just watching,
Absolutely.
yeah, for free,
Absolutely.
which is
And for
remarkable.
free, for
People
free,
charge a lot
for
for the
free.
for these classes.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. I've never charged a lot, but I decided to make this for free. But I also have for free on my YouTube channel a whole workshop on how to diagnose mental, spiritual, physical illnesses and how to incorporate this into a healing regimen. And so that's a whole nother sideline that anyone who's an energy healer or interested in healing people or diagnosing people. It's a fantastic workshop. You learn literally everything in there. And I have another free workshop on how to task. In other words, if you have questions you want answered, how do you write it up so that you can remote view it or map it in my case? How do you write these things up so that they're non-leading, so that they will give you a useful answer? And so my how to task is also available for free. So you combine those two workshops that I've already put on there in this new class, and you've got everything you need to answer any question in the known and unknown universe.
I'm intrigued. I didn't know that you did healing as well. I wonder, can
Yes.
you compare, transdimensional mapping as, what people call RV with, doing sort of prognostication or healing work? How are they related and how are they different?
So I came up with a method that people in the remote viewing community have come to call the gingerbread man. And this was like 25 or more years ago, where one of the things that bothered me about traditional remote viewing, the military style method, was there wasn't really a way to fully get into someone's body and figure out what's going on. Because, I had my own business going at that time, and a lot of the client requests were, I've got something wrong with me. I need someone to figure it out. And I thought there must be a better way than just writing a basic task. So I came up with this method where you draw an outline of the person's body and you do these little techniques to feel it and to probe it inside and outside. And then you draw the auras around or the spheres of influence. I prefer that term, but people think of them as auras, same kind of a thing. And you can figure out what's influencing this person. Is it alcohol, drug addiction, or trauma from childhood? And how is this person affecting the world around them? It is one of the most extraordinary techniques, I think, in all of remote viewing because, and I believe this is because we all have a body. So we understand it on a visceral level. And so that workshop goes into literally everything that you can do to figure out what's going on the outside and inside of a person. And then there's examples and people can try it for themselves. One of the things I do caution is that if you're going to get into that kind of work, consent is key. We live in a culture where people have an expectation of privacy. So if you're going to want to heal somebody or diagnose somebody, you can't just do a body scan of your neighbor because you don't like them and want to find out why they're so cranky, or, you know, you need to get permission first. And so we do have a big discussion about that in that workshop, but that's been on YouTube for a couple of months, and people love that class. So I highly encourage everyone to check it out.
It's so funny. I find that in this work that I'm doing, hosting these kinds of conversations, there's often a lot of overlap from different spheres, you know?
Yes.
And I've had interviews with a lot of folks who've had NDEs or done work around NDEs.
Yes.
And they talk about, you know, life reviews and sort of like the importance ultimately of a rendering at the end of the life where you're basically shown your net like influence, whether you were impacting good people in a good way or in a bad way, the situations where you showed love and compassion, and the situations where you were selfish and you were kind of shown both sides of those experiences. And it strikes me that like what you're describing in part sounds related to that whole nature of things, like energetically. We're supposed to be producing coherence, and I think the production of coherence or decoherence gets mapped on reality somehow, and we ultimately are confronted with that record at the end of this particular life cycle, if that's what it is. But I think it's amazing to hear like you talk about your experience, and then it lines up with what other folks have said about their own experiences. Pushes me to keep going, and it also, I think, demonstrates ultimately that there is some fundamental truth to all of this. Just amazing.
I recently gave a class, another free class in person, out in Virginia, Charlottesville area, to a group of consciousness educators and researchers and explorers, and the second day of the class, I gave them a personal task. They didn't know, they did this blind, and it was the reason that they're here on this planet at this time. What was their purpose in life? And every single student, and these are all high level, smart, interesting, fascinating people with incredible research that they're doing on their own. Every single one of them knew, once they were 10 or 20 minutes into the session, that they were looking at themselves. They all knew. And they had such a profound, deeply moving experience. They all feel that this was life-changing for them to understand what this purpose was, or to have a deeper understanding. You know, most of us kind of know what our purpose is, or know a little bit about what we're here to do or not to do. But they got a very multi-layered, deep understanding of them, of their own self. It was absolutely incredible.
For casual viewers, that's it for today. Thanks for joining us. For subscribers, stay tuned for an even deeper dive into how Birdie sees the nature of things and how she feels about the ongoing process of disclosure.
The Fourth Mind, Whitley Strieber's explosive new book. The first time alien anatomy, alien genetics, the alien brain, and the alien mind have ever been detailed publicly. Learn how they think. Learn what they believe. Learn what we mean to them. Learn when they are coming and why. Then, in part two, learn why we don't have powers like telepathy, levitation, and healing that they do have. Find out about the catastrophe that took our powers from us. Find out how we can regain them. The Fourth Mind. Totally new. Incredibly important. Get your copy today on Amazon. Available as a Kindle, hardcover, softcover, and an audiobook read by Whitley Strieber.
I wanted to really explore this with you because, I mean, obviously you've had a lot of experience with, stretching out into the greater reality and understanding things that are going on a deeper fundamental level. How would you describe what your worldview is? I mean, obviously this is not something we can discuss in 10 minutes and make any kind of huge progress, but I mean, is... Is what you've come to understand about the reality of things similar to a system that we've all kind of been, introduced to? I mean, how would you describe what is at work around human existence and our interactions with reality?
Such a great question. I do not at all believe that the world that I've been taught from a young age, or the reality, or the religions that I've been exposed to, I do not believe any of these are reality, but I believe they all have little threads and truths within them, which is how they all came to prevalence. But I believe that we are deeply connected in a consciousness field of some sort. There's probably a better term for that, but most of this language hasn't been completely codified out there in the scientific and philosophical community. So we're all struggling with how to describe these things. But I believe we are deeply all connected, and that we can simply turn our attention to anything, anyone, any rock out there, any dog, any tree. And we can become that and know it on such a deep and intricate level. And every time we have an experience like that or connect with another human being, it enriches us and teaches us something beautiful. I think that our culture right now has become very disconnected from this. We have become, a culture that we're all looking at screens all the time, and we're looking for that instant gratification, and we're looking for the sound bites, when what we really need are to have these kinds of deeper conversations, whether they're spoken or unspoken. Sometimes sitting with someone in silence is as deep a conversation as you can ever possibly have, is that your presence becomes mixed. And so that is my worldview. We are all connected, and we have to find that way back to source. I think that combined, we are source, and we need to find each other and connect together again so that we can become who humanity is truly meant to be. And I think there are a number of people out there who are doing incredible things in this area and teaching these kinds of things and sharing this with others. And I think that people are waking up, and that it may take this chaos that's going on in the world right
Certainly.
now. And that may be what is the deciding factor. We may turn away from this chaos and decide to live more in community than apart from each other. I think that's important.
Birth pangs. I mean, we're kind of going through it
Right.
right
It's
now.
birth pangs. It
And
is. You
I love
can't,
the
you
idea
have to
that
go through the underworld.
you do the
Yeah.
Anana's descent or whatever. It's interesting the idea and that going back to source means sort of uniting with fellow humans. I think that that's a really beautiful idea. And no, I appreciate that very much. One thing people may or may not know about you is that you're a disclosure advocate. You've been working on that issue for a long time. You're a friend of Mr. Sheehan and doing that work and New Paradigm Institute. I'd like to end the conversation with just your thoughts on where we've come to at this moment with the things being released and what you're hearing, if you're hearing anything at all about the progress of that and what you think we should be looking out for as we move forward.
I think that all of us who have been engaged in these circles for a long time in the disclosure arena are excited, but it's a bit of a cautious excitement at the moment. We're seeing some true movement. Now, since 2017, there's been tremendous movement. We went from having zero national discourse on this subject to having discourse in Congress, and representatives and senators coming out and making statements on that. That was unheard of 20 years ago. Now it's a regular, it's a daily occurrence. Every day we've got somebody else coming out, whistleblower, congressional member, talking about this. So there is definitely movement behind the scenes. Now, in the public, we're not seeing a lot of real answers yet. What we're seeing are suppositions, people's theories, and people who do have genuine sources. Some of our news people who are speaking in this arena, they're saying they've heard this, that, and the other thing. They've got sources, but they can't reveal it yet. So we are in this period where we're getting more information that isn't qualified in some way than we would like to have, but I think that it is a process. And having the U.S. government now do two UFO drops in just a few weeks is extraordinary. Even though these drops, I mean, I think some of the information in these drops is interesting. Some of the written documentation is fascinating. The last drop had the experiences from our United States astronauts. I think everyone should take a look at those because those are extremely compelling when you have one astronaut after another seeing and describing the unknown out there. It'll blow your mind. Yeah. I'm still looking for the full color photographs of aliens looking out of a porthole, but we're not there yet. But I do think we are headed there. And people behind the scenes are very cautiously optimistic that we're finally headed in a good direction with this. Now, of course, with all the chaos in our political arena at the moment, and, you know, we've got Iran, we've got gas prices, the economy, Epstein files, all of these insanities happening at the same time, it can slow down this process or make it less impactful. So we really need to get some of the bigger information out. And there are a lot of people behind the scenes working on some of these new whistleblowers. So I think over the next year, it's going to go from, I don't know, maybe at 15 miles an hour now. I think we're going to hit 75 miles an hour soon.
Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things that people who have who are opposed to President Trump have said, it's all a distraction. And I think that that's true. He's trying to create a distraction, and he hasn't quite gotten the bite that he's looking for yet. And so I really think it's possible he's going to keep throwing things out until he gets to where there's a big explosion of interest. I, for one, don't think that having UFOs, proven to be a fact is going to take away from our ability to hold any politician accountable. We can do both at the same time. It's walking and chewing gum. So if it's a distraction, whatever reason he needs to do it, that's fine. I still plan on doing what I can to hold him and others accountable in the future. So get manipulated. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, if that's how this information that humanity deserves and needs today, if that's how it comes out, well, there we go. I'm all for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Right. The end result will be worth the process in the end, I think.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Bertie, so much for a wonderful conversation, as usual.
Thank you, James.
You're going to be at Contact in the Desert in a little while, so I'll see you there, of course. I look forward to finally meeting you in person. But wonderful to talk to you.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.